And we are now live.
Thank you, AJ. Sorry.
No, go ahead. If you would start the meeting, just
yes.
Call the meeting to order, do roll call.
Yes. Okay. So we will call this meeting to order. And I will start with roll call. And I have this first name, and I'm afraid I'm going to say it incorrectly. So Elaine Eller-Mau?
Elaine Eller-Mau.
Okay, thank you very much. Rihanna Hensley?
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay. Kathy Duzin? I do not see Kathy. Hoover Shambliss? I see Hoover, but Hoover, are you able to confirm that you're here?
Thank you.
Lisa Shellman?
I'm here.
Thank you. Susan Cox?
Here.
Thank you. Dawn Norden? I do not see yet. And Michelle Weber is here. The second order of business, AJ has asked me to handle. We will need a chair and a vice chair for this committee. So if anyone is interested in taking either of those roles, that'll make it really easy. Otherwise, we may have to just ask some folks for their thoughts on who would be the right folks to take those two roles.
Well, it sounded like there wasn't anybody particularly interested. And so Cosette asked me very kindly if I would step up to be the chair, if that would be the group's choice. So I throw my hat into the ring.
Perfect.
There does not appear to be much of a ring at this point.
Okay, so... AJ, do I need to take a vote with roll call on that too?
Yes, I think it would be appropriate. If there's a vice chair, there's no reason why you couldn't vote on both of them.
Together, okay.
Yeah, is there a vice? And in case Lisa's not present, it would happen just like you saw today. The vice just takes over and conducts the meeting in the absence of the chair.
Okay. And I'm just going to say this is a meeting that I could have potential conflicts during with work. So I don't want to put myself in the position to not be able to be here. Any takers?
Come on, Ruth, you could be vice. I'm going to be here most of the time.
Well, Ruth is not actually technically part of
exactly.
The committee.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Did not know that.
Thanks for the offer.
I know. I'm used to you running things. So
of those who are here today, we have Elaine, Rihanna, and Hoover, if you are interested.
I'll do it, but I don't know what I'm doing.
AJ's really good at walking you through.
Okay, because I really don't know. Okay.
I don't either. That was one of the reasons why I was reluctant, but I know that we will get great support from the LTD staff to do this. So
absolutely. Okay, well, thank you very much for stepping into those roles, and we will go ahead and confirm those with roll call votes. Elaine Eiler, and I'm sorry,
Mal,
thank you.
Do you guys want to take a vote?
Yes. So is that a yes, yes or no on what we've just discussed?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm a little out of sorts this morning. Rihanna Hensley.
Yes, that's good with me.
Thank you. Hoover Shambliss. Are you a yes on this, Hoover?
Yes.
Thank you. Lisa Shulman.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, just leave it. Just...
Susan Cox.
Yes.
Thank you. And I too am a yes. So I will now hand this meeting over to Lisa.
And I have put the proper pronunciation of my name next to it. Since we're all going to be meeting together regularly, I think that would be helpful. It's Lisa.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, thank you.
It's on my business cards too, because nobody ever says it right. And people don't like being embarrassed by saying your name wrong. So my guess is that what I am supposed to do now would be to go to the agenda. Is that true?
That is correct, Lisa. If you could just look at the agenda, you guys have already voted on the chair and vice chair. And then you go to the first item.
Right. Where are we in this? You said the first item. There are so many items that
exactly, and that's okay. You know that actually, and I don't know if Camille, do you have the agenda up? Are we able to put it up? Because actually, it's good for this group to be able to know the structure of the agenda. So that's never a bad idea if Camille can pull it up.
So I have it in front of me, and what it looks like, the first item at noon was call to order. So I call this meeting to order.
And then we did road call.
So that's already done.
Michelle made some preliminary remarks since there wasn't a chair.
You mean I don't get to make a speech?
You can. If you're the chair, you can choose
Right. My speech is that we are going to move to announcements and additions to agenda. Does anybody have anything to add to the agenda today? It appears that's a no. The next thing it looks like we have is public comment from any audience participation. Do we have anybody who would like to make a comment?
Lisa, I am not showing anyone indicating they would like to speak.
Thank you. We have the one item we have for action we have already taken care of by electing the chair and vice chair. Items for board recommendation. My feeling is we're not there yet.
Yes, we have none. So then.
Please.
And the next is items for information discussion. And we do have some items there. And we have some people who are going to be giving us information. And it looks like we also have, we're given some materials in the packet. I know that sometimes people are challenged by getting the packet. Does everybody who wants to be able to look at this information have it accessible to them? Can we pull it up on the screen so that people can also look at it that way? That would be great. Thank you. And so it looks like our first speaker will be John Allen, LTD Services and Programs.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So I'm going to be very briefly today, just talking us through some of the different services that LTD offers and collaborates with partners on throughout Lane County that help get people where they need to go. So much of my work and the work of this committee is going to focus on how we can serve our communities of older adults and people with disabilities. And so I'm just going to go through, you're probably familiar with many of the programs that we offer, but potentially not all. So just a very quick overview of some of the different things that we do throughout our community to help get older adults and people with disabilities where they need to go throughout Lane County. So probably the thing that folks are most familiar with is our fixed route bus system. And we try and do our part to make sure that it is accessible to allow, in particular, older adults and people with disabilities, the independence to be able to get where they need to go using our fixed route buses whenever possible. And so one of the things that I think LTD and our community has been very proud of is we were actually the first public transportation system to be to have fully accessible vehicles before that was a federal mandate, before the ADA even existed. And so we carry on that tradition today, and we still have folks who have either moved to our community or have chosen to come here because of services such as the accessibility of our transportation. Just something just about our community, our own history, that I think has been a really important milestone, and we continue to try and lead and innovate in those ways today based on that kind of vision and leadership from the past. In addition to our fixed route bus system, you are likely familiar with our bus rapid transit. You probably know it better as MX, but you may occasionally hear us refer to it as BRTs for bus rapid transit. And those are just any routes that are operating on fixed guideways. So they actually have right of ways. You may notice if you're going through an intersection, the bus always seems to be able to get a green light as it goes through. We have our own kind of signaling priority as we're going through intersections. That's lane. That's unique to BRT that is not true of our fixed route system. We also have our mobility on demand programs and pilot projects. You may be familiar, we currently operate the Cottage Grove Connector in collaboration with the City of Cottage Grove and South Lane Wheels. And this is a way where someone can use an app on their phone or, you know, call a dispatcher the old fashioned way to pick someone up from anywhere within the Cottage Grove city limits and take them anywhere else within the city limits. So it's mobility on demand. And it's just our way of leveraging new technologies to find new ways to transport people. We also have at one point in time operated the MGO service in the downtown Eugene area. And so this is another way where we've tried to use the same technology, but in a different way. So one of the things that will be a theme, I think, as we go through our programs is many of these have either been on hiatus or are difficult, or we've chosen not to operate just due to the current pandemic conditions. Those will continue to change and evolve over time. But I'm just gonna give a very brief overview of all the services that you may want to familiarize yourselves or have come to expect. So we also offer honored rider and half fare cards to many of our riders. These are rider cards that we offer to community members. For anyone age 65 and older, it allows for free fixed route transportation. It's the best deal in town. For many of our older adults, this is just really a truly fabulous service that we offer to encourage bus ridership. So for anyone 65 and older, they can come into Eugene Station and get an honored rider card, and that allows them to ride for free. Half fare program is for people with disabilities who require some kind of accommodation or folks who are receiving either Medicare or certain Social Security benefits and some veterans to be able to be entitled to a 50% discount on any fares that they purchase through us for fixed route transportation. And so people generally come into our Eugene Station to access these services, and they get a rider card that allows them to be able to purchase their fare at a 50% discount anywhere that we sell it. And that also transfers to our tap cards for anyone who are using them or on phone apps for folks who are using their fare that way. RideSource is our main paratransit service. So not everyone is going to access the fixed route bus or is able to, due to a disability, access fixed route bus service. And so RideSource is our paratransit service to make sure that all members of our community, whenever possible, have a transportation option. This is, RideSource is not just the buses that you see around town. They're called cutaways. It's also our call center. So one thing that's unique to our community is we have one phone number in which community members can call, in which they can schedule and book a trip. And that's typically taking people within roughly a 3/4 mile boundary of anywhere where one of our fixed route vehicles go. So if one of our 40-foot buses goes there, odds are we have RideSource transportation to take them there too. So what makes our service fairly unique is that we not only serve our ADA passengers for fixed route, we're also serving Medicaid members through brokerages, which in Lake County are Trillium and Pacific Source. And we also serve members who are directly served by Oregon Health Authority. We also have many, and those services are known as non-emergent medical transportation that are dispatched to the Medicaid brokerage. So one thing in other communities, someone might have to call one number to schedule their medical appointment, call another number to schedule their public transportation. Here, we just try to make that simple for community members and say, if you just call us and let us know where you need to go, we'll worry about the details and take care of that ourselves and try and make that as easy and convenient for people as possible. So that's been a huge benefit and something that we work hard to try and make make accessible to our community. RideSource is not just ADA, Transit, and Medicaid either. So we have several other programs all served by the same call center. So these include mental health transportation trips that we partner with White Bird Clinic. It's also a shopper service, which helps particularly older adults go on group shopping trips together, again, during non-pandemic times. There are social outings where everyone can go together and even get assistance with their bags as they're being transported back and forth. We also partner, as Lisa knows about, with Pro Buck Center for preschool transportation. And this is in particular for folks whose, for children whose parents identify with disability. And there's some really amazing data about how successful these programs are as well. We also maintain a fleet of vehicles and perform preventive maintenance on all of the vehicles that are required to make this happen and work with, so we have our own internal fleet of over 50 vehicles, and we work with many external providers such as local taxi companies, medical transportation companies, stretcher vans, even on occasion ambulances. And so when you see many of these private transportation companies driving around town, many times they're actually transporting folks through and for a RideSource trip. One of the ways that we establish eligibility, so if someone calls RideSource and says, I'd love to ride on RideSource. Am I allowed, or is this the right program for me? We do what are called eligibility assessments. So we're basically determining, are any of these programs a good fit for the community member? And we partner with Senior and Disability Services, nonprofits, Alternative Work Concepts, and White Bird Clinic to perform eligibility assessments where, again, in non-pandemic times, we would actually come to someone's home or do an in-person assessment to determine what's the best ways we can serve you as a community member. How can we best get you where you need to go? Encouraging independence and helping people have options and really some self-determination and saying, you know, there are some days I may need to be able to ride RideSource, but other days I want to be able to ride the bus. That we encourage that and truly try and foster independence, particularly for older adults and people with disabilities. So we also do travel training. And so we partner with Alternative Work Concepts as our lead travel trainers to be able to help folks, particularly for many of our community members who identify with developmental disabilities, who may just need a little bit of assistance in learning how to use or ride the bus to be able to do so. And in the future, oftentimes without assistance needed. But for folks who may need ongoing support, we also have transit hosts who are stationed at Eugene Station, which can assist with folks who need to transfer from one bus to the other. So many folks are very accomplished bus riders, but may just need a little bit of extra support getting from one bus to another, particularly for transfer situations. So we actually have folks who are able to accommodate that in a way where it allows people to be independent rather than being, say, reliant on others. We have bike lockers at Eugene Station for those who are also using bicycles, and we have bike racks on the majority of many of our fixed route buses. We also partner with many community partners for things like group pass programs that we're doing with employers, student transit passes, so we're working with local educational institutions, low-income pass programs that we work with nonprofits and other organizations to provide discounted passes to folks who are in need in our community. And in addition, we're also doing some services that are based on building connections to other areas. So we operate the Rhodey Express in Florence and the Diamond Express that goes between Oak Ridge and Eugene Station. So this is just a very brief overview of just some of the types of services that we're offering and that this group may be working with directly. So we're looking forward to just getting your feedback, recommendations, thoughts, advice on how we can better serve our community. In particular, I think as we all come from perspectives of either being representative or reflective of people who identify with disabilities, older adults, and the folks who are serving them. So thanks, everyone.
So thank you, John. does anybody have any questions for John about what he just presented? It looks like we are a little bit ahead of schedule here. Is Matt Imlock available?
Yes, I am just joining. Camille, will you do me a favor and allow me to share my screen?
Yeah, absolutely. There you go.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. For those who I haven't had the privilege of meeting, my name is Matt, and I am the Director of Fleet Management. So excited to engage this committee. So what we have before us is kind of just taking a look at our future bus procurements. And at the end of this conversation, would love to engage and hear from this committee how we can engage further and in the future. So before we get into our bus procurements, really I wanted to highlight some goals that the board has for LTD as part of our climate action policy statement that the board signed in June of last year, 2020. And one of the things is our goal number one is to have 25 electric buses under contract in 3 years. And then the goal two is in 2035, 100% fleet turnover, which will be phase out of fossil fuels. And as you'll see, that goal is something that we're striving for, but does ensure that we need to continue to get new buses on our property. And when I talk about buses, it's really looking major, at our fixed route vehicles. As John said a little bit earlier about the 50 accessible vehicles, the ride source and other of our services, that is something different than what I'm talking about today. Right now, I'm specifically talking about the heavy duty buses, which would be the 40-foot buses and then the 60-foot buses out in service. The last point is by 2030, 75% greenhouse reduction from the fleet. So this is something the board has adopted, as I said, and something that we're striving for. Give additional context in our fleet, our fixed route fleet, just from a manufacturer and the size. LTD has 60 MX buses. Those are our BRT buses that are on the fixed guideway, as John alluded to earlier. We have about 19 60-foot buses. Those are, as my kids say, the Caterpillar buses or those articulating buses. Mm-hmm. And then we have about 6940 fixed route buses. And we have about 63 Gilligs and about 6 New Flyers. We're adding to the New Flyers, as noted below, with us getting 11 new electric buses. So our fleet shakeup will be a little bit different as we continue to cycle out some of our older buses. Our community investment plan, which is something that is out there that people will see. I'll just go over the next fiscal years to give an idea of what we're going to be seeing or hopes to see on our property. But this current fiscal year, LTD actually has gotten 5 MX buses. You'll see those out in the system if you ride. Those are what we call our 2100 series buses, but we have 5 that are in revenue service right now, which is exciting. We have right now in our shop, and that will actually start going out into service here in the near future, 11 40-foot electric buses. For next fiscal year, we're looking at getting 19 40-foot electric buses. The following fiscal year, 7 40-foot buses. These buses will be something to meet our board's goal in regards to the climate policy we talked about. So we haven't identified the propulsion type yet, but that's something we are going to be doing. And then in fiscal year 24, we are looking at 5 60-foot buses and then 7 MX buses. And just to note, the fiscal year for us goes from July to June. This right now is taking a shot of our electric buses, the 11 that I just talked about. And there may be a little bit, it's kind of tricky because on the middle photo, you'll see me taking the picture from the rear of the bus really towards the front. And then the two side photos are actually taken from the front, looking just at one area of that front seating layout. And so this is what we see in our new electric buses that we have. There are two areas for passengers in wheelchairs that can, or mobility devices to be put in one of those two front bays. This really mirrors what LTD has done historically on the majority of our buses, where we have the ability for self-restraint if someone chooses to. If people can see in the center, or sorry, in this photo where we have the restraint attached to the seat available for passengers to self-restrain themselves if they choose to. So with that kind of quick overview, I will hang out on this photo to first see if anybody in the committee has any questions so far about the content. And then just in future, I'd love to engage in a conversation with this group on the next slide about how we can engage with this group later. But for the content that is presented, does anyone have any questions that I can answer?
I do.
Great, Hoover.
The mobile arm in the front, are they working on most buses?
So the ones, and thank you. So Hoover's referencing, we had some buses that we kind of piloted for rear facing. And one of the hard things one of the opportunities is there are certain requirements federally for aisle width and some of those constraints. And so we tested out this new restraint system. It was an American Seating product, and it had an arm on it that wouldn't allow you to extend further into the aisleway. And so we had a group of people come out and test it, and the arm did not work, wasn't allowing for larger mobility devices to work. And so we actually, on this current electric bus, it is not shown in here to have what you're referencing, Hoover, as a rear-facing barrier. That is not included because of what we observed on that test, because it wasn't working for the majority of our mobility devices.
Okay.
Any other questions?
How many seats are on that bus?
Total seats? I believe it's 38, high 30s or low 40s.
Okay.
I can get the exact number for you after this.
What's the average seat count on most buses?
That's about for 40s. It's around that. For 60s, it's a little bit more. It varies with our MXs because there's a little bit more standing. But this series of bus average is pretty much the same seating layout that we've had on other seatings. But what I can do is get those averages and send them through just what LTD's average is on those seatings, just so I'm not shooting from the hip for you.
I had a question. What are you doing to ensure people understand the ADA on the bus? Are you putting up signs? Are you doing special buttons? The right of way of if a wheelchair comes in, it's appropriate to consider to move and stuff like that. I'm all for more ADA advertisement and coverage.
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now, and it may be tough to see, we do have that as preferred seating for people. And on the windows, you can kind of see where It's shown in on the window that they are preferred seating for people in mobility devices. So as far as how we can outreach further to communicate to our passengers, that's something we can discuss. And Cosette may have, or John may have some additional input into that, but on the buses itself, there are signs identifying those front areas as people with mobility devices take preference for sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, I will go to the next slide. And then these are really discussions. One thing as part of LTD's values is we continuously ask if there's a better way. And so the first bullet point really looks at that is, are there things LTD should consider in future bus seating layouts outside of what we currently have? So I would love to open it up to folks here on this committee to provide me feedback is what should we be considering that maybe we haven't considered in the past. And let me just say on this, I kind of maybe put you on the spot. If there are something that comes up afterwards, definitely reach out to us to say, hey, let's take a look at that. We want to be on the front end of some of these things, kind of as John talked about earlier, as we take pride with some of the accomplishments LTD has had just in this space. So I guess the second one, and we can jump back and forth, what would be the desired future involvement of this committee? I know pre-COVID, we were, prior to bus builds and even sometimes in bus builds brought people out and we're happy to continue to do that. And anyone in this committee, actually with our new electric buses, all you need to do is reach out to myself, John, or Cosette, and we would happily show and provide you what our buses look like. So the question again is, what's the desired future involvement of this committee and how can I help support that with our specific to our seating layout?
I had wondered if possibly we could have this just be an item that is regularly on our agenda so that if questions come up, if we all go and speak to the communities we serve or that we know, we can bring questions back about this because it does seem like that's one of the things that I've heard quite a bit as an important issue is seating layouts, et cetera, and also the signage to support making sure that things are accessible for people who need them.
Mm-hmm. I think the chair now that has the authority of some of that. But yeah, if that's an open item for that, I think that would... I'm supportive of that and hearing that feedback for sure, as well as everyone within this group. And I think I interrupted somebody who was going to have something to add.
Oh, I was going to ask a question, or it says, are there things LTD should consider in the future bus seating layout outside of what we currently have? And I have no idea what you currently have. So I don't know how to put out there. Are you talking about just this?
I would have and be open to any type of feedback as far as our seating layout. Obviously, it's easier. And as you look at the procurement that's are coming out, every bus build provides us an opportunity to ask ourselves those questions in the front end. So I could definitely, we can show you what's we currently have and tour a bus and multiple buses because there are some unique changes between series based upon when we purchased the bus. But I'm happy to show you some of the buses and what we're hearing from people might influence what we do on future bus builds.
That would be awesome because my question or what I would like to see is spaces provided in these special ADA spots for the caregiver. Mm. Because many will travel on the bus if their caregiver can be a part of it. And it doesn't look like that's made available, or that's not what I'm seeing.
Yeah, this really is looking at the front two ADA areas on the middle photo. If you look further on these two side pictures, you'll see that there are seating, and those are also preferred seating for people. You can see that sticker right there. So that is something if a caregiver comes on, and I'm not the operations person, but I do know, I'm pretty confident we kind of coach our drivers to allow for that, the caregiver to be in close proximity. But I can't speak fully on behalf of the operations team, but if anyone knows additionally how we address that, that would be helpful.
It would, yeah. That's it.
Thank you. So the offer is out. If you do want to come on site, my contact information, we definitely can get it to you, and we can look at some of the buses and get a good idea of what there is. One thing with seating, because we can ask ourselves questions what we could do better, I don't know if it's the best approach to always change seating layouts, because it does become complicated if someone comes onto one particular series of buses expecting it. So what we've tried to do is standardize some of it. And so that's one of the benefits I've heard from our team is for people that are coming, if they know what that front area feels and looks like, it does give them a benefit of getting on with confidence.
So this is Cosette. I'd be happy to add just a little bit of context. Again, this is something that we can have more conversation about in the future, but all of those seats in the front that Matt just showed, including the first, I believe, one or two seats that are facing forward, are specifically signed for to be reserved for seniors and people with disabilities. In addition, we do, during the onboarding and ongoing training for our bus operators, we do reinforce training and best practices to encourage others to move and to allow those seats to be utilized for seniors and people with disabilities. So I also just want to say that we've had opportunities in the past as we've purchased new vehicles and had opportunities to purchase kind of for different services. We do invite folks to come in and as available, test out some of our layouts or test out some of the vehicles prior to us necessarily making a purchase. And that's been really informative for us and really helpful for us in planning. So that's just a little overview.
All right, I think if no one has anything else, an action item for me is I'll send out just the average seating from a 40 foot to 60 foot bus is requested. And again, we're here and available and continue to love to engage this committee. With that, thank you guys very much.
Thank you. So it looks like the next person we have up would be Heather Lindsay, if there's nothing else.
Could I ask a point of order? In the past, participants with this meeting, not necessarily on the board, would be able to contribute. I just am unclear if the invite to this meeting is allowing for that, or if I'm only participating as called upon.
No. So the process has been all committee members receive a what's called a panelist invitation to Zoom. so you are active members and active committee members. The staff and public receive a separate public access Zoom link, and they contribute, public contributes during public testimony, and then staff contribute during their agenda items, and we pull them over as appropriate. So it, any committee member that's wanting to ask a question or speak, the chair usually facilitates, and you can use the raise your hand feature or just raise your hand or get the chair's attention and speak up as you need to.
Okay, because I had my hand raised for quite a while and just wasn't sure.
Okay.
So thank you.
Sometimes people are still kind of adjusting to Zoom, and sometimes it doesn't get seen. If you have your hand up and it doesn't, and you're not called on, it's likely it just wasn't seen, and I would recommend just speak up.
Okay.
I did not see a hand raised. So
I'm going to press it. Do you see it now? Next to my...
Oh, there it is. It's so tiny.
Yeah. And if you're not looking at that part of the screen, you don't always see it. So, okay. That's good clarification for me.
Ruth, did you care to say something?
I did. As far as just an interest for interior design, I've really liked seeing the seats in a pairing of seats where there's a few that can be flipped up, so that if someone has a grocery cart or their walker, they can bring it alongside them, and it doesn't have to be out in the aisle or secured somewhere else. That seems to be pretty effective for meeting those types of needs. So that's great to include.
All right, thank you, Ruth. Does anybody else have anything they want to add? All right, it looks like we are probably ready now for Heather. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
And Heather is going to talk to us about the overview of the summer bid.
Hi, my name is Heather Lindsay, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys. I'm going to talk about our summer bid changes. And I'm not sure how many people are familiar with our system, but this is our system map. So you can see that we travel a large area. We go from Coburg to McKenzie Bridge to Dexter, Lowell, Cresswell, Cottage Grove to Veneta, all the way to Junction City. So cover a large area. So I believe everybody got this handout, so I'm just going to go over it at a high level. So for our summer bid service changes, they're going to take effect Sunday, June 13th. And for the majority of this bid, we looked at our routes and our trips and looked to see which ones were struggling to have some overload issues. And so we really looked at addressing those. You know, we're still in the Health First initiative. And so that's kind of our approach that we took for summer bid.
Heather, could I ask a question? When you use the term summer bid, could you just explain a little bit more of what that means?
Yeah, sure. We have three bids a year that we do. So we do a fall, a winter, and a summer. So right now we're in a winter bid. And so that gives our bus operators a chance to bid on new work. And then it also gives us a chance to look at our schedules and adjust them for like 4J schedules or U of O, LCC, that kind of stuff. So we're required by the union to do at least three bids a year. So so currently we're in winter, and this is looking forward to summer bid.
So just to understand a little bit, so the you're required to do the bids, and so the drivers are able to bid for different routes, and because it makes sense, then you do some changes to the routes and times, et cetera, because that's a good way to time things. Is that the case?
Yeah, exactly. Fall is kind of when we do our major service changes. And it also correlates with when LCC and U of O and the 4J Springfield Bethel districts, you know, start their programs as well. So that gives us an opportunity to add more routes or add more trips, you know, depending on what the school systems are doing as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so for this bid, we really took a health first initiative. And so we looked at our routes and looked at some of our trips that were having some overload issues. And so we added some trips where we could to help address some of that. The other thing that we did was previously in winter bid, which we're in currently, we did not have routes 27, 33, 55, 73, 78, 85, and 82. We did not have those routes in our current service. And so we added those routes back with the exception of Route 82 for summer bid. So we added those routes back, but we're not quite at pre-COVID levels. So we added just limited trips to those routes that we added back. So for example, Route 33, we added 4 trips back. Versus the pre-COVID level. So it's limited service that those trips are being added. And then just looking through the rest of this, it's just kind of time point changes that we saw that we needed to adjust to help the drivers a little bit. And then scrolling down to our rural routes, Route 92, Lowell, we adjusted the departure time on Saturday 5 minutes later, just so it matches weekday, and then also gives our customers 5 minutes extra time to catch that 5:30 departure. And then Route 95, we added an additional 2:30 p.m. trip to that one as well. And so that's kind of sums up our summer bid changes. Does anybody have any questions on this document? I do have one other change. So for Route 55 North Park, it's out River Road area. This was not included. This is not one of the routes that was included in our winter bid. And so we couldn't make those adjustments. So now that we're bringing it into summer bid, it's now gonna go to our new Santa Clara station. And so we adjusted the route for that. So it'll be arriving and departing in Bay A there at the new Santa Clara station. And then it does have another routing change as it departs the Santa Clara station going back to Eugene station. We previously would use Silver there to head back into town, but we're not able to make that right turn because now we have to travel onto River Road and then we would turn right onto Silver there. And we're not able to do that turn with our buses because there's a median strip there. And it's a barrier, so we can't make that turn anymore. So we just rerouted it to River Road, and then we're gonna turn right on to Maxville there. And so we have 2 stops that we're putting into Maxville there. We're just waiting for the county to approve those stops, and then those will be going in there. And then from Maxville, it just resumes the normal routing. And then this is an example of the new timetable for Route 55. And as you can see, it's limited trips still. I believe we had 6 trips previously, well, 6 or 8 trips previously, and now we're just doing limited trips with 4. So. And that's pretty much the summary of summer bid. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, well, thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to bring this to you guys and look forward to more conversations with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather.
Thanks, Heather.
So if nobody has questions for Heather, and it sounded like no, I don't see any hands raised. So it looks like we have Kim Lee is next.
Hi everyone, my name is Kim Lin. I'm a development planner here and thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm gonna go share my screen really quick. Can everyone see that? I'm going to talk about the strategic business plan, and feel free to ask questions, comments throughout the presentation. We'll probably have plenty of time as well at the end to have discussion. But basically, since the beginning of January, LTD has embarked on our first ever strategic business plan. And the idea of a strategic business plan is that it's to provide focus and clear direction for LTD. It serves to bridge our mission, our vision, and our values to our day-to-day operations. And so in essence, a strategic business plan would help us focus on our work on achieving the broader goals of the community. So that's a very broad overview. Let's dive into the agenda. So we'll talk about the process overview, the draft mission, vision, values, goals, the communications plan that accompanies this, and then next steps. So in November of last year, 2020, we put out a bid for a consultant to help us lead this effort. And Transpro Consultant was selected because of their extensive experience leading strategic planning processes throughout the country. And so you'll see that in this presentation, this is adapted from theirs. And I just want to acknowledge that this is, you know, their Transpro-led PowerPoint slides. And so when we embarked on this effort, we wanted to ask, introduce four key questions. And that is, how does LTD define success? Have we ever defined success? We do a lot of things here, but this is an opportunity for us to kind of step back and say, okay, what will we need to do to deliver on that success? What metrics do we need to track to ensure that what we're doing will be successful? And then who, staff-wise, is responsible for the delivery of those activities and the performance it enhances? And so this is a broad overview of the process that the Transpro consultant developed for us. And so the idea is that this would facilitate a business plan that's clear, comprehensive, and actionable. The first task that they have embarked on is to refresh our mission, vision, values, and goals. This includes a lot of what's called the discovery phase. We have a lot of studies, a lot of surveys, plans, documents that we, you know, look back on to see what we've done well, what needs focus, and so forth. We also have had a lot of meetings and workshops with the board of directors, one-on-one, as well as work sessions. The next board of directors is going to be next week. We've also talked with the strategic planning committee. And then moving to task number two is what's called scorecards to create a culture of ownership. And essentially what it is we then talk to the workforce, really, really engage with our executive team, the directors, as well as different levels of the workforce and different departments, as well as committees within LTD, such as the diversity committee or council and the union. And that the idea is that we want to really engage the workforce to understand, okay, you know, what are the things that we want to focus on in the next 1 to 2 to 3 years. The third task is the draft communications plan. And this, I'll go over that portion in a bit, but that's also one of the deliverables. And then the fourth and final task is, of course, the combination of all of this work to bring a draft and final strategic business plan for the board's adoption. And this is the schedule overview right now. So we, as I mentioned, the process started in earnest in January, and we're about at the halfway point right now. We're hoping to have the board of directors adopt a communications plan at the next meeting next week, and then working through the process, hopefully final adoption in July of this year. So in talking about the role of the board of directors, the focus is on, you know, their role is to ensure that LTD has clear direction and is delivering on our mission, vision, and outcomes. And so the board's role really lives on the why and the what part of this teeter-totter. And the why is our mission, vision, values, and the what is the measurable strategic outcomes. And then from there, we move to the other side, which is then the board empowering the staff to manage how and who is responsible for getting that work done. And so that's, you know, the milestones, the scorecards, as well as the performance and monitoring. And so I wanted just to pause there and see if anyone has any questions so far about the process. If not, I'll move on to the draft mission, vision, values, and success outcomes. When we talk about the mission, we want to be clear that, you know, this is the question of why. Why does LTD exist? What's our purpose, cause, or beliefs? And the draft, the working draft statement right now, connecting our community, you know, while it's short, it actually has had a lot of extensive work behind it, including a number of board as well as strategic planning committee meetings and extensive conversations with the staff, the workforce. And we have had, LTD has currently a mission and vision statement, but one of the things that we realized is that our current statements are can be characterized as long and hard to remember. And so we came up with connecting our community. The word connecting has a lot of, I think, meanings that really encapsulate what LTD does. Connecting as in the transportation network, you know, we get people to places, but also connecting as in the partnerships, as in, you know, I think one person described it as we're the vein of the community, the blood flowing through the community. And so I thought that that was very powerful. And then the vision is what, how can LTD articulate our long-term vision to define success? What are we striving for? And so the working draft that we came up with is that in all that we do, we seek to create a more connected, sustainable, and equitable community. The word connected comes back again. And this is, you know, again, after a lot of discussions with different entities and committees and councils at the agency. And then we also want to encapsulate the values. So how does the workforce, how do we behave on our way to the future? You know, what do we hold dear? And the six that we came up with are respect, integrity, innovation, diversity, safety, and collaboration. And recognizing that, you know, this, there are a lot of things that we value, and we can't really, you know, we started out with a very, very long list, and this is what we narrowed down. The next step in this is I'm actually going to be creating the definitions, the statements that define what these words mean more clearly. But this is what we have come up with. And one note is that, you know, at every department level meeting, before we didn't have the word safety in one of our values, but that came out very strong and clear. And so it was, you know, important to us that we put in safety as one of our value statements. And then leading to the defining the success outcomes. So, you know, we have the mission, vision, and values. That's what we, the community values are. Now, how does that lead to LTD LGD's work plans. And so this is the five areas of focus, what we call strategic areas of focus, that we have for now it's in draft form, but I think it's pretty well defined. The first is the customer satisfaction. Second is community value. Third is employee engagement. Fourth is financial health. This is performance, but it's we change it to health. And the fifth is sustainability success. And we assign points to each of this, understanding that there are a lot of things that we do have trade-offs. And so coming out of the pandemic, as we're coming out of the pandemic, what do we want to focus on in the next 1 to 3 years? And right now our kind of agreement is that we really, really strongly want to focus on customer satisfaction. The other aspect is the community value and employee engagement. We are looking to swap those, because in discussions with our workforce, it was very, very strong as well, that employment engagement is one thing that we want to focus, as well as community value. And we would give definitions to what these are. And so these, the success outcome definitions that you see here are in working draft form. But the idea is that, we can't be great at everything. We can't be good at everything. But if we focus on these five things and really move the needle on them, then this will bring forth, the successes in our community values. So I just wanted to pause there and see if anyone has any questions. So if not, I'm going to move to another component of the strategic business plan, which is the communications plan. We want to make sure that the goals of the plan the communications plan are clear, and that is to inform the workforce and community about the process and goals of the strategic business plan development, as well as the final strategic areas of focus and priorities. And number two, solicit meaningful feedback at appropriate points in the process to inform the plan. So these are some of the example strategies or tactics that we are engaging during this plan, the development process of the plan. So for example, we have a kind of all hands on deck inside the bus meeting that's held at least once a month, if not every other week. And this is where, we give regular updates to the workforce. We have, as I mentioned, department meetings, board one-on-ones. We have a public website that we're actually putting out this week, and with information for the general public, as well as just advertising on social media. The other aspect of this is a community stakeholder survey. And we wanted to target it to collect meaningful feedback. And so we are looking to your membership here on the CACTC. We'll be inviting you to take that survey, which we're hoping to roll that out as soon as into a week and a half. But some of the examples of questions that we would like to ask you all in that survey is, what do you believe are the three most important areas for LTD to focus on in terms of customer satisfaction or improve on? And what do you believe are the important areas that LTD provides value to the community? And on a scale, how important is it that LTD address the following areas in its strategic business plan? So those are some of the examples that you'll see in the survey that we'll be sending out. Moving on to once we hope that the strategic business plan is adopted by the board in July, during the plan rollout, some of the example strategies for communications, communicating about this plan is continue to have board and community engagement and involvement. We'll also use public the website as well as social media and other print materials to inform the public about this plan. And so the next step in this process is we will next week go to the board and seek the adoption of the communications plan. As I mentioned, we'll be sending out the survey to you as well as various stakeholders in the community. We're wanting to finalize the mission, vision, values statement, and then the draft, the first draft of the plan will be available in May of this year, and the final draft will be available in June. And so that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to take any questions, comments from you all.
I think that was a lot of great information. I don't know, I have a question, but it if people want to take a little time to consider for a minute, thank you very much for that very concise, and I really like the visuals that you gave. They really seem to help. One question that I have is how the community stakeholders have been identified, and approximately how many and who those might be.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I didn't include that slide. But so we have a communications team here. And at first, you know, we took the first effort was from staff. We identified the stakeholders and partners that LTD works with on a regular basis. And so that's organizations like United Way, the NWACP. And then we brought that to the strategic planning committee in March and asked for further feedback. And then from their feedback, we added additional stakeholders. And then we categorized them into different, you know, what representations they are within the community. So for instance, are they, you know, environmental organizations? Are they social service providers, nonprofits, educational, equity-focused organizations? I don't have the exact number of stakeholders that we have. I want to say it's at least 30. So, you know, within those categories are a number of organizations represented. So, for instance, environmental, we have 350 Eugene. We also have the U of O and different, you know, LCC, different educational institutions. I'd be happy to send out that list to you for your feedback. But we also wanted to make sure that you as representatives of your respective organizations would also be involved. And so that's why I mentioned the survey. We're also asking our board of directors when we go to them next week to provide us with, you know, additional input and organizations that they'd like us to reach out to. We'll also probably have one-on-one meetings, very focused meetings with, you know, selected leaders within organizations as well. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I believe so. I think that that list would probably be very interesting. I guess that my a question that I would have would be, just sort of how we can ensure besides the people who are in this meeting that people who need accessible transportation are being represented. And if that really is mostly coming through this this group, then what the expectation is in terms of how we determine how we can represent that group.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that feedback. When we send out the stakeholder survey, I think that we would definitely want to turn to you for input in terms of, you know, who else are we missing in that on that list. I'll give you that list, and we would definitely want to make sure that, you know, we vet that with you and add additional ones if they're not on there.
Thank you. I see Susan has her hand raised.
I do. Thank you for all the information. It's a little bit like drinking from a garden hose for my first meeting. But one of the questions that I have with regard to just accessibility. Do we do any kind of accommodation for international students? I'm thinking about like the Korean students who come here and don't necessarily speak English very well. Is there some connection with the Asian Pacific Islander leaders? And I'm thinking of Asian specifically, but other communities that would need a little bit of extra help with regard to language or just understanding?
I am not sure that we have that level of engagement with those communities right now. I could be wrong, and I'm looking to others on the call here that might be able to answer that. But as far as my understanding, you know, we will be reaching out to the different universities. I can't necessarily say that those universities will reach out to their Asian or AAPI communities specifically, but is there something that you can suggest to us? Maybe there's an organization that we could be reaching out to that we might be missing right now?
Sure, I'd be happy to talk with you, you know, about it offline. I think there are a number of just different organizations, not just for the API community. I would certainly think the international program at the university and some of the other places that have a broad network and umbrella that could just, it's another way to network and also get other people aware as well.
Okay, great. Yeah, we can reach out to you.
Sorry. I see that Ruth has her hand raised also. Ruth?
Yeah, I'll just chime in. Great presentation of what's being developed. And my understanding as we do the surveys that if we provide a different prioritization of those different values, that what we saw earlier in your presentation of a scoring, is that going to adjust based upon if the community of stakeholders decide that there's a different focus they would like LTD to have? That's open for change through this process. And my other thought is, are we reaching out to the veterans and associations that are business and industry, as well as the social service audiences?
Yeah, I can tackle that question. And if AJ wants to jump in, I would encourage that as well. So yeah, like I said, it's we are still developing this and the process is still ongoing, which means nothing is finalized. And that is one reason why we want to reach out to these different organizations is that, you know, if we, of course, worked a lot on the back end, right, to try to figure out, okay, we always know that things like customer satisfaction is very important to us, sustainability. And that's a big umbrella of things, you know, programs that we can do that kind of filter into that. But we might be missing something. And that's where we hope that all these feedback would come in to help us with that. And like you said, maybe something will rise a little bit more to the top than others that we're thinking of right now. That's the first part of the question. The other question, so I, you know, that's a good thing. I did not put veterans organization, but I'll make a note of that. We do have social service and nonprofit agencies. We also have things like LCOG, the senior services. Was there another one that you mentioned that I...
Oh, businesses, they're paying payroll tax, so right, they're going to be highly motivated.
Yeah, exactly. So that for sure, we have not only the different chambers, but we also have like the Tao and Eugene Table. So different business organizations represented. And I believe AJ is on the Springfield Chamber, and we have, you know, we have a very close partnership with those business organizations.
Great.
Do you want me to add? I can add to that a little bit. I think you asked an important question, Ruth, about what if the information that we're provided, we get a different response from community members. How will that be incorporated? Ultimately, it's the board of directors that make the final call.
Okay.
As staff, what we have done is we have taken all of the technical knowledge we have, all of the institutional, we live and breathe this every day. So we definitely, this is what we do for a living.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to bring a product that is reflective of our community based on all of our combined knowledge. So we do all the heavy lifting. But after that, of course, we need to accept public comment and let the community tell us how we did and where we got it right or where it needs to be modified or where, you know, there's disagreement. We would take that information to the board of directors and likely modify it ourselves or recommend a modification. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it's the board of directors that would say,
mm-hmm.
based on what was presented before us, based on the community input, we may have our own opinion. Or we'll accept, you know, what we're given. But the board, and the nice thing about this committee, we do have Don Noren, Michelle Weber, and Susan Cox. So they're able to hear you today really saying, hey, if you miss somebody, let's offer. And that's what we're looking for today, is letting you know what we're doing, but letting you know that we don't know everything. We can, you know, you guys are involved in a lot of other organizations. So the more you provide us, it makes our knowledge bigger. So at the end, the board of directors can feel confident that people, not only did we reach out, but people connected us with other people. And mm-hmm. therefore we got the best representation, that the board will feel comfortable at some point making a decision yeah. about that. So that is our goal. So today your input is very important, especially as Susan mentioned, some of the organizations that perhaps we don't regularly make contact with, that we maybe we should, especially during this process. So it's going to be really key that we continue to hear from all of you and anybody you need to connect us with.
Yeah. Well, thanks, AJ. And that's my main concern, is there's no point in offering a survey if the input doesn't change the dial at all. And so if there's a genuine interest in that input, you also help the community to feel like they are being responded to. And I know that LTD has worked hard with their community image and presentation of services to make sure it is designed for the stakeholders in investment for the community needs. And I just want to make sure that's still going to be a part of this whole inclusion process. So it sounds like that's what you're doing. I'm just supporting it.
Absolutely. And this is definitely Michelle's and Susan's first meeting. But I think, you know, for future meetings, as they get, you know, and it's not only their first meeting of this kind, they've only attended a couple of board meetings, so they're really getting to know the technicalities. But I think this committee is really an opportunity for them to hear from community members and for them to take back this information when they're with the full board and say, you know, we heard concerns from our stakeholders that want to provide input, but want to make sure that their input is accepted and heard and considered prior to a decision. So I think you making those comments is very important, because somebody could be listening on or watching this at a later time and having the very same question. Is LTD putting a survey off and at the end they stay with what they developed? It's good that we do have that conversation, and it is a topic. So mm-hmm. Ruth, I know you run your own service, and yeah. you know the importance of us all doing that. So thank you so much for even like bringing it up. It's very helpful.
You're welcome. Thanks.
So I don't see anybody with a new hand raised. Susan, did you still have something that you wanted to say? Okay, thank you. It looks like we don't have any written updates, which is the next thing on the agenda. And then the next thing after that is future meeting agendas. I had an idea in looking at this agenda that it would be great to put people's titles and who they work for on the agenda, as well as their title, as their name, so that we can all know who it is that we are speaking to or is speaking to us. I believe that people probably also have introduced themselves verbally, but sometimes people really would prefer to have information in written form. So I want to do that. I had just some questions about in terms of developing agendas in the future. I know that we will be reaching out to the committee members for any time that they have anything they want to add. So you will be part of us developing these agendas in the future. I wondered if there's anything that any of our committee members or anybody else would think of that might be something that's a good thing to add regularly to the agenda. And of course, if you have thoughts of that nature in the next few weeks, we can also, you can email. Who should they email if they have thoughts about that?
They can always email the clerk of the board.
Okay.
She is the one, Camille, she is the one who sends the board packet out to you all and gathers all information and ensures that she gets it to whoever the right staff member is, including myself. But she's always the best key point of contact for public meetings. We will also be ensuring that at the next meeting, we have an annual calendar. There's a lot of things that will be coming up. We're looking at how we redeploy our service, as you heard a little bit today, post-pandemic. We will continue to take an analysis of all of our service. And as you know, anytime you're making service decisions, you've got to figure out where you put service and where you don't. And we need to hear from this committee as, you know, what are those impacts of those decisions? This committee is really designed to give us a comprehensive overview of accessibility to our services. At the board level, there's a lot of discussions about big picture. You saw the big map with a lot of squiggly lines with a lot of routes. But what we forget that in between those routes, there's people. And how do they access buses? So today, John gave you a good overview that the fact we do fixed route, we do bus rapid transit, but we do a lot of other services to fill those gaps. So as we move forward in making decisions, especially about different mobility options, we need to hear from you who have those connections with different people. And the three board members that sit on this committee really benefit from understanding the challenges that are faced by different community members due to accessibility. And they're definitely a great voice for all of us on the board of directors. So I do want to thank you for your continued support. These are quarterly meetings. We want to make these meetings productive and informative for you. So we move them to quarterly, monthly. We just kind of bring you in here and talk at you. But what we really want to do is have a good agenda that matters, that informs you, and that you can provide us valuable input to take back to our board of directors. I do want to commend before we close here is Rihanna Hensley. Rihanna joined me on a panel with Congressman DeFazio. And I think the input that she provided about the value of public transportation is the type of messaging that our congressman needs to hear from users, from community members, with people with challenges. So I feel she did an amazing job, Rihanna. I don't think I could have done any better. So I want to thank you and just thank you for continuing to serve on this committee. So welcome aboard.
Thank you so much.
So it says that there's a calendar attached. Is there a calendar attached? When is our next meeting?
It's a quarterly meeting.
So the schedule, we have two more meetings this year, one in July and one in October. And the schedule of those is actually something we wanted to talk to you about. Historically, this committee has been held on the second Tuesday of the month. Being that this committee was kind of on hold for so long, we wanted to see if that day still works for this committee. And being that this is there's relatively new members to this committee. So for the rest of this, the next two meetings, we would be looking at July 13th. And I think it's actually October 13th as well. October 12th would be the next two meetings. So I wanted to just get I can send a doodle poll out, but I wanted to get a general consensus of whether that Tuesday works for the majority of the committee.
And is this the time frame, noon to 2:30? Is that the time frame?
If that works best, yes. That is also flexible. We've held it 10 to noon before. We've done 2 to 4 before. And to get more detailed, I will definitely send out a doodle poll. But if this day absolutely was not the best option, I wanted to get a general consensus for that right off the bat to kind of narrow it down a little.
And we were trying, we know some of you work, so we do know doing it at noon maybe helps kind of offset any work with your lunch period maybe. Unfortunately, we're not in person, so we can't provide you a few snacks or anything, but just thoughts about that, and we'll let you guys kind of talk that through.
Elaine, go ahead.
Wednesdays are a heavy Zoom day for everybody, and we're sitting on Thursday, aren't we? So never mind. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It was a Tuesday we were looking at, Tuesday the 13th of July.
Tuesdays are good.
I personally have something, unfortunately, sitting right in those meetings between 1 and 3 on the 13th of July. But I think a doodle poll maybe would help us to resolve any issues people have with timing. That would be an issue for me, but it might be fine for others. Of course, Elaine has already said she's really hoping not to have to do the chair part. I think a doodle would be great.
Susan, go ahead.
I think for me, it's helpful, whatever time it is, that it's always the same. So you can depend on this is when it's going to be and calendar it in. The other question I had, in July, is there, maybe not by July, but in October, maybe July, are there going to be any possibilities of in-person meetings or a hybrid of in-person and Zoom?
I can answer that. I don't know if July is realistic. I would say our public meetings will probably follow whatever we do about board meetings. If our board meetings are back in person, it's likely that we will then follow our committee meetings. I was feeling a little optimistic a few weeks ago as our numbers were so down and everything was opening up, and now everything's going in the reverse. And of course, we hope it's temporary because people are still getting the vaccine. But I would say if we want to play it safe and just plan ahead, we can just say July is a virtual, so people can plan accordingly, and then we'll plan for in-person in October, unless this committee were to decide that virtual is more accessible. You know, accessibility is one of the main priorities of this committee. So I would say that we can put that on the agenda for July, is talk about accessibility in public engagement. And this may actually be helpful for all of LTD's public meetings, is for this committee to really talk about the fact that we have heard that the fact that these meetings are virtual provide people who have physical disabilities or even time constraint or language barriers, they can go back and watch everything in slower motion or can watch it remotely, can watch it at different times.
Right.
So there is an accessibility element that I would really think that we can put maybe on this committee's to-do list to talk about that. And maybe in the meantime, you can talk to people in your circle, in your organizations, and engage them in that conversation about, you know, if how do you think public meetings could be more accessible? Does the recording, our meetings are now broadcast via television, Zoom, and we do a link. So the recordings are included for people who weren't able to participate. Susan, Michelle, those of you may not know, LTD's meetings have never been recorded before. Zoom was our first time. So our meetings have not been accessible except for in person, or you can request minutes. Those were your only two options before. So we have increased that accessibility. So maybe July virtual, and then we'll put on the agenda that you guys will discuss that. Okay.
Thank you for that. So I just want to, because we're only having four meetings a year, I do want to stress that I would love for us, for instance, if the survey, which is that going out in July? Is that correct? Or?
I think it's going out in May.
In May? Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so that there are things that are going to come up and hopefully be communicated to the members of this group in between meetings that might be things that we want to reflect on in the next meeting. And if that is true, those of you who are on this committee, I urge you to really consider, we're only meeting four times a year, and we definitely want to make sure that our voices are heard and that we are considering matters of accessibility throughout the year, not just at our quarterly meetings. So since you have volunteered to be part of this committee, we urge you to really consider how these things are going to affect accessibility moving forward for all of our community. So I believe that we are now at the end of our agenda, and we are at the end of our time. Is that true? Perfect. So do I need to move to adjourn this meeting? Or do I need to ask somebody to move to adjourn?
You can just adjourn. You can say, I hereby adjourn this meeting, and we're good.
All right, then. With no other comments that I see, I hereby adjourn this meeting. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Good job, Lisa.
Oh, you're good at this. I need you by my side.
Yeah, good job.
Thank you.
I'm glad to let you. Bye.